Good morning. This is Disability Justice, an everyday pursuit in survival. Your host, John Griffiths.
And Dina Wilder, board operator.
Good morning, Allison. Would you please introduce yourself?
Yeah. Hi, John. My name is Allison Fuller Barber, and I am a resident of Portland, Oregon. I experience cerebral palsy and I'm a quadriplegic who relies on in-home care through Aging and Disability Services. I have an exception rate, which means I get more hours of care than the average person because of my exceptional needs. And so I get 8 hours of care or 9 hours of care a day. Mm-hmm. So 5 hours in the morning and 4 hours at night.
How has the caregiver workforce crisis impacted you?
Well, let's see. In June, one of my long-term providers had to leave the position. I put out an ad, but it wasn't getting any bites. And I started to talk with my friends in the community, and they were saying that they were experiencing similar times, and they have been going for multiple months without responses to their ads or significant staffing to meet their needs. And this had been going on for some people. They had said 8 months. For some people, they said a full year. And most of them cited the low income or the low wages and the low amount of hours that they were each allotted.
And you did say that you had post an advertisement for this. I'm just a little curious, where does one post an advertisement? I mean, if somebody was looking for a potential job in this field, where might they find these advertisements?
So usually it is in Craigslist under gig employment or et cetera, or healthcare jobs. The problem with Craigslist is that there are a million posts for caregiving, and it's all very generic. Like, you're only allowed to put a very generic title in for your caregiving. So there's nothing really to differentiate yourself from other listings. And there's about a million listings. So it's hard to get bites on from the public on your ads on Craigslist. The other places I posted in the past are places like Indeed, which is more expensive, but you can also post at colleges on their job boards through their employment departments or their job search departments for their students.
So then there is like no posting through the state that you can do to like maybe get on some kind of list or something, like that?
You can post onto the home care registry, and there's a current ad up for my needs on the registry, but that as of yet has had no feedback from anyone. Also, when people are getting responses, I've heard from plenty of people that they have gotten responses, but then a person agrees to interview, but doesn't show up for the interview, or shows up for the interview and says okay to the job, but doesn't show up for the job. So that's part of what's happening too out there.
And that could be a real problem for somebody who's on a ventilator.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, this kind of brings up another question. Isn't there like an on-call substitute list that can be accessed in some way?
There's not. There is no way for me without using my own devices to. I should be able to call a case manager and have my case manager access some kind of on-call list and able to get somebody out to me. That is not at play in the Aging and Disability Services end of things. It is not at play on the DD side of things, as far as I understand.
You're so, absolutely right on that one.
Yeah.
I've had mines up for ever and a day.
Yeah. I think that one of the problems with the crisis is that the burden of finding staffing is placed on the person with the disability who, if they're in the middle of a staffing crisis, could have real functional barriers, you know, or real issues even getting on the phone and connecting with the person. If they're stuck in bed, as I would be, right? You can't access the phone to call anybody or to advocate for yourself in a really real way when your basic needs and health are not being addressed first.
Mm-hmm. This sounds like a serious crisis. People on the intellectually disabled side are able to access PSWs and DSPs. But from what I understand, people with physical disabilities can only access home care workers. Am I correct on that?
Mm-hmm. One of the major ways we could fix the system is to standardize the rates of pay, benefits, and titles for the staff that we're using across the board. If there's a disability with a need for home care workers. On the aging and disability side, the worker is called a home care worker. Or HCW. There is a different pay structure for the home care worker. I believe for home care workers it is very much less than they would get than working for the DD side. So that is a disincentive to come work for us. But also an incentive for working for as a home care worker for the aging and disability side is you get the medical coverage, you get the the access to the extended Medicaid that they give to workers. So that is the plus is the medical care. The minus is the lower rate of pay. What would make it a lot easier for people to cover everyone's need is to provide uniform rates of pay and benefit levels across the board.
Do you think that the reason why they keep the physical caregivers different than the mentally disabled caregivers different is to keep the two sides separate so that we're too busy fighting each other rather than going after the state or federal government and actually getting caregivers on equal ground so that we can actually get an equal amount of caring that we need to maintain our lives?
I do feel like it creates a little bit of infighting, and also my needs should supersede the other. But I don't believe it was built because of that, to create that. I think it was built because in some way, compensation rate for developmental or intellectual tasks is somehow perceived as being more work, so that the pay is better for developmental disabilities versus physical disabilities. When kind of I don't think you can compare apples to oranges. You really can't. And I think that there's a lot of really hard physical work that people have to do on the aging and physical disability side. With me, for example, I'm a quadriplegic. It's, you know, very physically demanding work. And I think that a pay rate should not be even a question, you know, part of the bargaining chip. It should just be solidly one rate.
So I was aware that it was HB 2964 that had gone down to defeat. Now, true enough, this would have only affected direct support professionals, which are on the intellectually disabled side, but it may have been a start to actually getting some stability within the larger community. You know, like if the direct support professionals have a standard wage, why in the world don't the home care workers have one and the PSWs have one as well? And, you know, that particular defeat, I think I think it not only shot people with intellectually disabilities in the foot, it shot kind of like maybe everybody with a disability in the foot, because this would have been a foothold in which we could have said, okay, we got this side now stabilized. Now let's work on this side.
Yeah. I think the main point that we need to, like, one of the main changes we need to make is we don't need to mix sides anymore. Everything needs to be on the same level playing field. And once it is, we can start advocating for better pay rates and universal health coverage at different hours that people are working. It just needs to be one playing field. That's one of the major issues. because you're right, probably the fact that it came down to defeat on the DD side will mean it will also come, something similar will come up for the aging and disability side and be summarily rejected because of how that was treated on the DD side. That's how that works. Yeah. So it comes down to, first of all, I don't think that the pay rate on either side is equitable to the work that someone is doing. When you're looking at nursing wages, you're looking at people that are making $20 to $25 starting per hour. And unfortunately, that is a huge lift for the state to do, but that would only be the time in which we are able to attract people to the jobs that we are offering. We're not able to do that right now at the current rate of pay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to kind of clarify some differences between the services that those with a physical disability can get versus those with an intellectual disability can get. Mm-hmm. From what I understand, you are not able, I mean, if you had some kind of social anxiety or some difficulty getting out there and being around people and stuff like that, you're not able to actually get some kind of service that can help you out with that. Do I have that correct?
Well, I think that the people that come from the physical and disability side, they're just the folks that don't qualify for based on IQ. So that is everybody else. So the aging and disability side catches everyone with a normal IQ who has limitations in other ways. That's mental health, that is physical, and that is aging. So we have people that are working as home care workers that are working with people that are profoundly mentally ill and providing those kinds of supports to connect them to their communities, to help them get out to do errands, to keep them calm and able to connect to their community. So that's happening with the aging and disability services. But is it happening well? That's debatable, right? There's no specific... I look at the DD system and the aging and disability services system because I work, I've worked largely within the DD system as a professional. What I see is a lot more wraparound supports, people that you can go to and say, hey, I need this change in my plan. If this is not working, we need to change this goal on my ISP or whatever they're calling it now. What are they calling it now? They're calling
You can call it, I have a certain term for it, and I don't think I can say it across the air, unfortunately. But yes, I do believe we call it an ISP.
Mm-hmm. So the
Individual Service Plan, I would like to state that an ISP is not where a person with an intellectual disability gets their hours from.
Mm-hmm.
So many clients get confused on that. They think ISP is where I get my hours from. No, it is not. You get your hours from your assessments.
Okay, thank you for that, because it's been a while and I know that the assessments and all the different names have changed. So I just wanted to make sure I was saying the right thing. When we're talking about the DD system, I think that there's a lot more wraparound supports that one can access. You've got your case manager, you've got your care coordinators in a lot of cases. And then you've got your direct support staff. So you've literally got a tree of people. On the aging and disability side, aside from your annual, which looks at your needs and looks at your financial eligibility for Medicaid to continue, right? Those are the two things that looks at. Based on that, that's the only support you get from the person, from your case manager. All the other stuff is supposed to go through the Home Care Commission. The Home Care Commission is who is supposed to be talking to you about your needs, and getting you a reference list of people that are looking for work. I personally hired off of that reference list and had people come and do no-shows. I've had people come and and show up for one shift and actually steal my door code and door key and not come back and drop off the face of the earth. So the Home Care Commission is really falling down on a lot of things, including providing a referral list that actually has people ready and willing to work in your area with your needs. Also, there's no base training on needs. So they're only serving people that are highly verbal and good at communicating what their needs are and how and can self-train, because there's not a lot of training out there for somebody on all the different conditions that come through aging and disability services. So if you're verbal and know and can have the patients to self-direct your care and show people what you need done, then you're in good shape. If you're not that person, then you're in bad shape under the system.
So in other words, I mean, just being a person with an intellectual disability, I am aware that there are two case entities that can serve to help you advocate for what you want, which is either a county case manager mm-hmm. with caseloads somewhere as high as, what is it, 80, 70 people? Yes, very high caseload.
Yeah.
Or you can have a brokerage, which has a much lower caseload, but in my opinion, still a very high caseload, anywhere from, I think it's from 36 to 42 mm-hmm. on the caseload.
Yeah.
So these are the agent, or these are the people, and yes, you're right, we do interact with them at least when we want to. We don't always do this, but when we want to, we can interact with them more often probably than you would interact with the person who's helping you coordinate your care, mm-hmm. which it sounds like is the Home Care Commission.
Yes. My case manager, the main things my case manager does is he's the money guy. He's the one that's making sure that people are reporting their hours, that I am signing off on those hours, and that those hours are correct. And those are hours that they're actively working for me. That is the guy. He is the bean counter, basically. He basically tells me, you know, how many hours I have and make sure that the people that I'm working are getting paid. That's all that they do. And any other concerns about staffing are really out of their purview. They don't seem to have a lot of advocacy around getting someone in when people are in need of staffing.
So that's pretty much just left up entirely to you to find your own people. And if there's nobody out there, you could be in a lot of, you could just be laying in bed until somebody comes along.
Right. So the way I view it is case management on the aging and disability side is like an accountant who's taking care of your hours and doing a lot of math and making sure the checks are going out and people are getting paid, but they're not providing any support for your health and well-being. Mm-hmm. I mean, by making sure that you have the staffing that's adequate.
So it does sound like you all need to be able to be a part of brokerages as well.
Mm-hmm. I would advocate for that. Yes. I have had, you know, I have cerebral palsy, but I also have a mental health condition. So I always have to defer to my husband often to do some of this work when it's too stressful for me, because I don't feel good because I'm not clean or I haven't had my full care, to put the demand on me to then advocate for my own needs and get new people in and sell myself and seem like a good person to work for. It's a little bit of a tall order. So mm-hmm. I've relied on other staff members to help me with my own staff recruitment. I've allowed my husband, when it gets too stressful, to put messages out to the group to ask for coverage when I don't need it. Because I'm not, for being a person who has a pretty high need, I don't like to ask for help. So that's a big, and I share this because I don't think I'm alone in this struggle. I think a lot of people which I think the IQ rule is is misguided as well. I think the IQ rule should be done away with because the federal law says that anyone with a disability prior to the age of 20 or 18 has a developmental disability. So that would do away with the IQ component entirely.
And can I just say one thing? That's only if your parents were wise enough to get poking around in the service and get you that diagnosis before you turned 18.
Right. And there's been some talk about retroactively saying someone was if they're diagnosed after age 18, like saying that this was present at birth by a doctor, like that's assessing them at 30, right? Saying that this was at place from birth. So those are in talks. But you know, any way we can do with it with the IQ notion is also a barrier to services because it's putting people into pots and it's not helping, you know, into categories, and it's not helping with the services either. And we could all use, because our needs, our basic living needs, all need to be met. We all need that support to be able to get staffing in, because there's going to be points when all of us, regardless of how fine, mentally stable or our IQ level, will need support to speak up for our own needs and advocate for our own best interests. Mm-hmm. I think the fear is that the case management system will become overreaching and start speaking for us the way the institutions did in the past. So that would be, there would be have to be a healthy medium of like trying to figure out when they're reaching too far into our lives and taking away our abilities to speak for ourselves.
Or just taking away our humanity?
Yeah, or humanity, right. So there has to be a fine line to walk, but I think everyone deserves a degree of support in managing and finding their own care.
You know, you're bringing up some very good points. How do you think we should start advocating for all this? I mean, obviously we've been advocating and telling, you know, legislators this on so many levels and on a constant basis. And yet it does seem like every time we see a bit of light on the horizon, they shoot it down. How would you suggest that we advocate for something like this when it does seem like those we vote in to represent us aren't listening to us at all?
Well, I think you have to go back and realize that America is the only industrialized nation without universal health coverage to understand the basis of that ill. So I'm a huge proponent for universal health care, and we still need to push for that in however many years it takes for us to get. In the interim, we can fight for a higher wage and for medical coverage for all healthcare workers. Even those who work on the DD side need to get enrolled in basic medical, you know.
Perhaps some benefits as well?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this is just, I'm aware that there's a union around home care workers and PSWs. But when it comes to the DSPs, they do not have a union. They might get a slightly higher wage, but they don't necessarily have the benefits that the union gives.
Yeah. So what I was saying is like everyone needs healthcare across the board. So mm-hmm. we won't move this by moving a mountain where we talk about all of the issues at once. We have to tackle this kind of in silos, one issue at a time to get some traction. So raise the wage for DSPs and personal support workers on the DD side.
Yeah.
Raise the wage for people with the aging and disability side to be commensurate with that, because both of them need a raise into like the 20 to 25 range. Now that's going to be a huge push because that asks for state funding to be way higher, which is something they don't like to do.
From what I understand, the state often has this slosh effect when it comes to funding. And no offense, if they can slosh around $1 billion or maybe $100 million, I don't know anybody else who could do this, then certainly within that sloshiness, they could find the money to increase people's wages.
Yeah, that definitely needs to happen. I think we are considering it a class action, bringing class action and figuring out who's going to support that. So we'll see where that goes. And legal support, yeah.
So, well, I have discussed this so many times with so many other people. It's not just you who's been in this kind of crisis, but I actually had a meeting with a director over this particular crisis, and they were saying that they've had actually several people come in and say, we're in the same boat. We can't get caregivers in, and our person needs caregivers. One of the things that popped up is, why couldn't we bring a class action suit underneath the Staley Act? If there isn't a workforce, then you're not, you know, doing what you said you were going to do with the Staley Act, which was to provide services. Mm-hmm. I do believe it was mostly on the intellectually disabled side, but maybe we can also bring along those with physical disabilities and really get in there and make the state start taking a look at things.
I think so, because right now we have people actively having declining health due to this crisis that are actively, you know, having higher incidence in their mental health crisis due to this crisis, and people who are at risk of dying currently who are in this crisis. Mm-hmm. That's how I feel like we can fix it.
Yeah, and I got to say, I am all for universal health care. Come on, let's just do universal health care, all right?
If there's any tag to this episode, it's let's get universal health care in America.
Yeah, that, and we also have a caregiver crisis. So, Allison, I would like to thank you for coming into the studio and telling us about, you know, how this is impacting you.
Thank you for having me. Well, John, I'm so glad you have this platform. It's very important. Thank you for doing it.
That's the end of Disability Justice. Since we cannot be fully aware of everybody's difficulties within the community, we would really like it if you would send us your email, disabilityjustice@kbu.org.